Good afternoon, everybody.
Good afternoon, Chelsea. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you.
Gemma?
Hello.
Keeping yourself out of trouble?
I try.
Had your coffee yet?
Nope. I've managed to slide that on across.
Change the subject.
Yeah.
Avoidance tactics.
This isn't my first time.
Washing your hair. All sorts of things. Yeah,
got to do my nails.
Exactly. We need a coffee. We're shot in the dark. And we're talking nutrition. Or
should caffeine be part of training?
Yes. Yes.
Simple.
You know the Rock. You know the Rock. Gets up at 4:30 every day.
Starts clanging and banging.
Little caffeine. Then he starts clanging and banging like a madman. Oh, we like the Rock, don't we?
We love the Rock.
The Rock does things the right way. Does things the right way. We're talking about nutrition. And athletic.
Small subject.
Yeah, just a little one. might require more parts.
See how we go. Try and keep it concise.
Yeah.
If you two can manage that, that would be quite impressive.
Oh, welcome back, Gemma.
Thank you.
Nice to see you. what are we doing? What are we talking about? Where should we start?
It's such a huge subject.
It's enormous, isn't it?
I think.
I'm gonna jump in there.
Come on, Chelsea, jump in. Don't bang the table.
Macros. Macros is where it's all at right now.
When you say where it's all at, what do you mean?
The current trend within the industry from where I'm at is macronutrient balance.
Elaborate.
Yeah.
So they're all focusing on getting the right ratios of carbs, fats and proteins. Basically, they've called it the macronutrient diet, but as I had a tongue-in-cheek conversation with a bodybuilder, he was like, oh, macronutrient diet, so basically calorie counting, which is what we've done for the past 30 years, but it's now been repackaged, relabeled as...
And sold.
Does it fit your macros, bro?
I saw somebody on a social media site that had managed to put donuts into their macros somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. I mean, this is the thing that bothers me. Like, from my perspective, people having enough food versus not having enough food, that's an important factor. But then what the issue with some of those macros is you've got some people recommending, oh, if you're down on your carbs and you want to smash some Pop-Tarts and some donuts post-training, go fill your boots to get your carbs up because you need to fit your macros at the end of the day. Whereas then you've got, on the other side, you've got people who are like, no, it's your good quality starches, vegetables, proteins, etc. So it's coming from
not
good sources
versus
bad
sources.
Yeah. So that's where the industry is at the moment.
And it will change again in another 5 years.
Yeah.
What about you, Phil?
How long it lasts. I think, well, the fashion, what we see in the public eye will. I think the people that are involved in nutrition will probably keep it up.
Carry on doing
we'll,
that.
We'll
so,
carry on
yeah.
doing that. Like, bodybuilders have never changed.
No.
Bodybuilders are the same.
It's more the sort of, like you said, mainstream media that changes what people do. And people chop and change so much, don't they? You see people going from, well, I'm now counting macros, actually now I'm just doing the calorie side of things, or now I'm doing... And it was all the same principle, but just packaged in a slightly different way.
Yeah. I think the thing is like, why do... Making that detail on it, how many people really want to go there? Like, how many people want to weigh and measure the food?
I tried it for a month, I think. It was most... Well, it didn't last any longer than that. I mean, that's not entirely different to my personality trait, but I mean...
Well, food and psychology is pretty much
hand in hand.
We'll take that another time, I think.
But that pattern of... I think that's where it keeps flipping and reversing of like, oh, well, only... If you eat these foods, then you don't need to worry about counting. Whereas if you're eating these foods, then you need to be on point with how much is going in, and that's constantly flipping and changing, like the evolution of Slimming World, for example.
Which
the vegetables used to be free, or well, they were never, what was something wasn't free before, but now it is now free.
I think we need to be careful with the concepts here, mate, because we're talking about, we're not talking about nutrition in general, we're talking about a small, I mean, it's your area of where you work.
So, of course,
what's fashionable in that area now is that, but it doesn't mean that's fashionable in other areas. And I think there's a really good point in that there's some areas things haven't changed very much, and in some things they phase in and out and different things happen. And what's funny is how it's always a little bit like our What We Don't Know podcast all the way back in the start of this is it changes all the time, because to be honest, nutrition, no one really knows what the right food for the right person is. And I don't mind giving an opinion on how people should eat, and I don't mind having a view on it. And I'm sure as the podcast develops, I will have a strong opinion on what people should do. But I think the important thing to say is that no one really knows that. No one really understands nutrition well enough. I mean, I can watch you squat and I can see your hip go left or right, and I've got a clear visual picture. I can film it. I've got tangible evidence. I can sit and use that. I can judge your mood when I put some food in you, and I can see what happens, but I can't prove that it was the food that had anything to do with your mood after. It can be things that happen in your life, sleep or work or whatever. So I can follow a piece of food a little bit through your body and see how it ends up as a molecule and see what hormones it stimulates, but I can't necessarily say if that's right or wrong for you, or if that's good or bad. And although there's a lot of people who claim to be able to do that, they can't really. And I think that's important point is that there are all at the moment just concepts of nutrition, and I think if there was one that worked, everybody would use
it. Be doing the same thing, yeah.
The fact that all we have all these concepts all of the time proves that no one really knows what to do, because the one person who finds the golden recipe, everyone will do it. That will be the acid test there. I think that's an important point to make, is that we're not sort of claiming to know it there.
Yeah, I think what you said there about different people recommend different types of food, that definitely rings true with like with my experience with nutrition and having my health. I've got ulcerative colitis, which is inflammation of the colon, which is the bottom end of the intestine, the amount of nutritional reading that I've done over time, that variance on one particular diet said all you should eat is potatoes, and then another particular diet was like the worst thing you can have is starches.
Yeah,
and it's you got two completely, and you've got
all
anecdotal evidence of like all the people in the book saying I followed this, and my colitis is so much better. Followed this, and my colitis is so much better. And then it's going through it yourself and just going, well, what works for me?
And what didn't, and
what didn't, and that.
Well, I will always say I think a good nutrition plan takes 3 years. I think with everyone I've worked with nutrition, I've said, okay, the process starts now and it goes through many failures and many upturns and many downturns until you reach a system that you feel like that suits me and that works for me, because it is so individualised, it is so personalised. I think one thing that we like to do is we like to look at the principles of things. We try to look at what we can't argue with, what we can't discuss. And I think that I can't say to you should eat this meat or this vegetable or this vitamin or this mineral. And as I say, I can't then say this will help you or this will make you better. All I can say is I know of the three incidences where that has helped. But if we can try for a second and say, well, what is it we know? What is it we can't argue with? What is it we can't discuss in nutrition? And try and have some principles of it. What we know is we have a stomach. What we know we have is an intestine. We know we have bacteria. We know we have pH balances. We know we have the way the musculature works. And we know that they're muscles. We know that they have cells. And so we can use that knowledge to help us. And I think if it's okay to just jump in with a little bit of a nutritional concept and say, my only goal for my athletes and myself is actually to have that balance, to have all of those muscles and all of those acids and all of the pH balances, have them all right and have them all working, because we can affect that, we can measure that, and we can see what's going on there. And okay, some people will eat a certain type of food and that will have a negative effect on that system, and others will have a positive effect with different types of food, which takes periods of time. And I think that process is where we need to start with nutrition.
So what are you? So when you're going through that process, then what are you? How are you measuring the effect of that food on that particular process of the stomach, etc.? Yeah. What
I think that there are ways of doing it. You can blood test, you can pH test, you can do different things. But I think that ultimately the way to test it and the way to do it is actually to give a prolonged testing period, which is why I say it takes 3 years. I think the problem is you hear a lot of, if you can't sustain a diet for more than 3 months, then it's not a diet you can sustain. So then that's, you just throw that out the window for a start. So the first thing really is the practical element of it, working on what practically can I live with, what practically can I get into my life. And one of the key aspects here is the whole, you know, you have those psychological blocks with, you can't squat 100 kilos, you can do 99, you can't squat 100 kilos, and on that day you can suddenly squat 120 and then 100 is easy. Or once you can run 10 kilometres, 5 kilometres becomes easy. And food is a little bit the same. It's a blend of our culture, of our parents, with our mum, our dad's food culture, together with our own then household food culture. So we're fighting against a lot of things when we're trying to change nutrition. That's an important distinction. And so we're trying to fight against these sort of cultural issues. And then we've got this block, and it's far too easy for people just to say, yeah, well, that doesn't suit me, or I can't do that. What actually happens is, if you can have habitual change and follow that nutritional strategy for 3 months, you start to think, actually, it's not that difficult. So I think the first barrier, the first battle, is trying to get people past that. I mean, the classic one is in swimming. It's so difficult to get the guys to swim 4 or 5 kilometres. They swim 1, 2, 3, and it's fine. Just getting over that psychological barrier of swimming more than 3Ks, and they do it for 3 or 4 weeks, and it starts to be, okay, yeah, I've got... So, you know, like you break a horse. Not saying necessarily it's a good thing to break a horse, but you have that almost where you mentally break, and this is a break of a positive aspect, that you say, okay, well, nutritionally, I've broken myself into that habit and into that way of life. And then suddenly the cheat days and the extra stuff and the bad days aren't necessary anymore. They're not needed because you've sort of adapted to that way. And it's only really there you can start to see, is this diet plan working for me? And I can fine tune from there.
There seems to be a lot in the, again, in like social media and in the media in general, is that people want quick fixes, though, don't they? They want, and a lot of it's aesthetic as well, isn't it? And they... You see people that say, oh, in 90 days I can get you to do this, or in 60 days I can get you to look like this. And it's trying to change people's perception that that is the good thing. Yeah. Because you don't just want to be on something, like you said, for 3 months or for 90, whatever, for 6 months, whatever, that you then can't sustain, because you're only going to fall back into that bad habits. And so if you think to yourself and you've got a barrier or a goal in your mind, like, oh, if I can do this for 90 days and I'm going to achieve everything that I've wanted to, you've still got to think, can I... It's continuing that. That's you now, if that makes sense. And especially if you're an athlete and you're training, it's not about just aesthetically looking one way or being able to achieve one thing. You've got to be able to sustain it in the long term. And I think that's where things fall apart a bit.
Here's, two points on that. I once worked over at a gym in Ireland, and one of the people in Ireland was, what he actually said was, so I was working, that brings me on to a point where I was working...
You're better at it.
On that sustainability point, I was once working in Ireland, and the guy that was there told me about a local trainer who had a system where he actually sold diet plans that was basically bodybuilding cut for a competition. So the person went through a 12-week diet plan for a bodybuilding cut. They took photos before, photos after for this body transformation. The guys basically did like water depletion, everything. Just exactly what a bodybuilder would do.
Yeah.
Bear in mind, pre-competition, all the bodybuilders can never hold it. And they're almost at death's door when they climb on stage. But the guy was literally selling this process so people could have that image of that was me in the best shape of my life for all of 1 week.
Yeah, exactly. And then for the holiday.
Rebound afterwards. Which is just...
But that's it, isn't it? But that seems to be the way that people are at the moment, I think. And that seems to be the way that sort of... Again, it is media, but the way that media has gone. But that's not... Just like you said, it's not sustainable. It's not what it's not going to fuel your sport or your training. It's just...
I think I'm not very good at tennis. I think I've played 5 times in my life, so it's a good example to say. If I was going to take up tennis tomorrow, I accept that I might be good at tennis, but it will take me 2-3 years to be good at tennis. It's learning a new skill, mm-hmm. and nutrition's no different. It's not, you know, I think a lot of the time you go to a nutritional advisor and you get this diet plan, you think that's what I would need to do. It's not that simple. It's a process. It's a psychological change that you need to go through, and that process takes a long time. You need to learn and you need to coach yourself. For me, I think that the place to start is to go after intestinal and stomach health, and try to have a muscle that works. To put it as easy and simply as I can possibly say is, you know, a stomach that works and can distribute and send nutrients and food and energy out to the working muscle and pretty much, you know, the whole thing, you are what we eat. So whatever we're putting in, you know.
Just remembered a funny card, sorry, carry on.
I mean, tell us a story now.
The card is at the front and the guy's like, well, I don't remember eating a legend. It's got more profanities than that, but I thought I'd leave it. Okay. Sorry, yeah, carry on.
So I think that's it. I think that is... it's about intestinal health and stomach health, and I think that is a learned skill or a learned, you know, you want to develop, if you want to, I don't know, have a big squat or develop a muscle group or train a muscle group, there's that acceptance that takes a long time. I think if we want intestinal and balanced stomach, that takes time.
Yeah, I mean, I can completely back that up with my... with my last year of nutrition and with my health, because obviously it is a gut related issue.
Yeah.
So I started this time, so over Christmas, started with a 10-day fast, just to allow my stomach and allow my body to not be having to process food, and that was the beginning of a removal of foods to gradually reintroduce, and that process has taken a year, and my guts were still, they probably took about 2 or 3 months before they started to turn around and show they were digesting food well and everything like that, and my health has grown in the last year. I've had less colds than I've ever had in the last 2-3 years. And I'm actually coping with training as well. I'm actually getting some training done at the same time, which the gut has
if we look at the stomach as a muscle and say, look, if I go to the gym and my favorite exercise, bicep curls, and I just do bicep curls, just keep doing bicep curls all day, or you say 7 times a day I do 5 sets of 10 bicep curls, and I do that every single day, at some point I'll get tendonitis in my elbow, or my biceps will hurt, or I have some kind of problems or fatigue, and actually my weights will go down, even though I'm getting stronger, my weights will go down because I'm just tired and tired and tired and tired. And I think a lot of us, we just, I mean, especially the CrossFit guys, I mean, they walk past a box and then they need to go and have a steak. I mean, you know, this whole fear of overtraining and overeating, 90% of the athletes I eat just use training as an excuse to eat too much and just overindulge. I mean, overtraining is a poor excuse. You know, you hear it, oh, I don't want to overtrain, so I need to eat this. The stomach needs a break most of the time. You know, the abuse the stomach gets, not even talking about the qualities of food. We can discuss qualities of food at another time. Even I'm talking about top high-end, if we believe in the clean eating way of life, we can discuss that. I don't know if we do. But just having that muscle working for 14 of the hours in the day, just giving it a bit of a break, giving it a bit of a rest. And I mean, I'm having huge success with literally just eating the three times a day, just giving your stomach the opportunity to recover, and then thinking about what foods am I eating and how much stress am I placing on the system. I think it's crucial to know what am I putting on the system now, what type of foods are coming in me. I think that's really, really important.
Yeah, I mean, I was once told that years ago with my gut, was your health is like a bank balance.
Yeah.
Input and output. So how much you're paying into account and how much you're paying out. And he said, yes, you're paying into the account with nutrition, but your body is expending when it is digesting.
Yeah.
So the types of food that you give it, the amount that you give it is taking up energy and it is exhausting it, which is why I started with the fast, to give that gut a chance to just heal, to not be getting broken down with training. It's a good good analogy.
And the type of food that you put in as well, it has a direct input or a direct effect on your body's ability to heal itself or to sort of correct anything that it needs to. And I mean, if you're constantly sort of feeding instead of allowing things to sort of, like you said, take a break or and putting the right sort of nutrition in, then you're never going to reach that health level, are you? You're never going to be able to...
Right. Well, I think that's it. And I think that the good feeling comes from, I mean, I think with Jousy and I, we're very lucky in the respect that when our bodies are unhappy with what we're doing to them, we put on weight. You know, we can go up and down with 10 kilos in a calendar year, that our weights can swing a lot. And in that respect, I'm quite happy with that, because I've got a clear indicator, I've got a clear marker that, you're, at the moment your body's at some kind of distress, or the bank balance, as you nicely described it, is out of kilter now. But there's a lot of other people who get sick or who are training at such a capacity or at such a level that they never put that weight on. So they never change, their body shape never changes, but inside they're incredibly unhealthy. And I think those guys are the ones we can see from an athletic standpoint. They're training and training and they're really in good shape, but there's some fatigue that sits in them. And suddenly they just go from being fatigued and they start winning and they start feeling good and their performances go through the roof. And we haven't really done anything different, but just suddenly they're starting to be healthy again. They're starting to, their body's starting to work with their body rather than against their body. I think that's the most power I've seen in trying to have the guys with a, just looking at nutrition as health, even for athletes, rather than just this fuel bank, if you like how much can I put out, so sort of instead how much can I then put in, and that sort of very hard way of treating your body, and without meaning to sound soppy, but just loving your body a little bit, you know, like making sure you're giving your body what it needs and finding that balance. And actually, I'm finding I need less training for the same results, which is very interesting. And okay, so then we might choose to train at the same level still and get even better results. But if we just want to maintain a level, we don't need to train so hard. But there are also injuries and recovery, and there's this huge differences we're seeing.
I've occasionally seen people state these comments that they're gaining body fat to increase performance.
Yeah, they're just misunderstood. They're just confused.
Elaborate. I thought you might say that, which is why I stuck it out there. Why would...
What's the theory behind it? Why do people think that in the first
place? I don't know. Okay. They're just saying that having too low body fat is not conducive to performance.
Yeah, all right, mate. Okay, I can agree with you to a certain extent.
Where's the marker, I suppose? Is like, what's enough body fat? What's not enough body fat?
I mean, like, I'll give you your juice. I've actually got quite strong opinion here for a change. And I think if you're talking about going from 10, 11% down to 6, 7% during race season, I'm with you. But walking around with 16, 17% body fat and calling yourself an athlete, you shouldn't be allowed to call yourself an athlete at that level. You know, and I think there's a little bit, again it's that that psychological thing where it's just a way of justifying what I'm doing. It's a way of justifying the lifestyle I want to live, or justifying really not taking yourself seriously, not finishing it, not doing it properly. Yeah. Like, you're an elite athlete, take yourself seriously. You know, if you want to be at the top level, walking around with 12-30% body fat is not an elite athlete. I mean, I look at it in back from my old sport and the rugby guys there. I look at them now, and a lot of them, I've got to be careful what I say here, but I look at them now and I don't see athletes. You know, you'll see some athletes, but I just think, get yourself together. You know, and it's just, we're allowed to have that culture of a few beers, and you're allowed to have that culture of a little bit of extra fat because we're rugby players, and it's the culture of our sport, and it's just wrong. There's no excuse for any of them to have that level of body fat. They shouldn't have it. They should be better at what they could be better players, and they would be better players with less body fat on them. And I just think it's that looking yourself in the mirror and take yourself seriously as an athlete.
So that stick, going back to what you said earlier on, you say that stage going from 11% down to 6% during the season isn't a good thing. So is that something that you try and do away from competition? Like, potentially being at 6% is better than 11%, but it's just where you're doing it and where you're making those adjustments.
The sport is very relevant, of course. Yeah. In that respect, because I mean, the cyclists, the lighter they are, the faster they go. So there, it's quite important to be as low as possible. But in a rugby player, I don't think a rugby player needs to be 6-7%. But a rugby player who's training those hours the week they're training, I think the thing is it's like, if I could just put this in a bottle, the way that we could have them feeling, and you could sell it as a bottle and get them to drink it, they would feel so good that they would then, you know, they would then want it themselves.
Them to
want
to, yeah, exactly.
And it's just I think my frustration is I don't want to call people out or point fingers at people. What my frustration is, I just think there's so much more you can get from them as a body, for what ultimately is a little bit of a weak excuse. So I don't think potentially a rugby player should be 6% body fat, but they shouldn't be 20% or 25%. They should be 12%.
It shouldn't be 40%, which is what some of them are.
Yeah, they shouldn't be. They're athletes, and they have a responsibility for their. I mean, they're out there smashing themselves every single day, claiming that they're doing it for the best of the team. And how can anyone be claiming to do it the best of the team when they're 25% body fat? You're not. If you want to help the team, get fit. You know.
So would you say body percentage is a level of fitness, though?
It is a marker of the respect you have for your body and the health of your body, and how healthy your intestines are and how healthy your stomach is. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. My body fat's dropped off since being healthier.
Yeah, but it does. It does. A healthy body will a healthy, happy body will always. You know, I'm a classic myself, mate. I'm a classic myself. As soon as my body's out of kilter and a little bit unhappy with how I'm treating it, I put on 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 kilos, and that's it. And I get, but I'm lucky enough to get that message. I'm lucky enough that I don't train enough to be able to hide it. but there's a lot of guys out there walking around very unhealthy, very tired and very stressed, and these are the guys that get the overuse injuries, and these are the guys that claim overtraining, and these are the guys that have all these problems, and it's nothing to do with overtraining, it's nothing to do with overuse injuries, it's just to do with treating your body so badly, or as badly as they do. I don't think I've seen an athlete who eats well and sleeps well and looks after their body and does things who is injured or has these problems. But you're asking your body to go through an enormous amount of stress with the 20 to 30 hours training a week, and then you're just then you're just adding to or compounding the stress with, we can talk about sleep and other things in another podcast, but with just having the one muscle in the body that's responsible for delivering your energy for you when you're training, stressed, tired and overworked. So I think that that's the, I think that, that for me, that's the key element of it is looking at what causes, and we've talked a lot, we've talked very conceptually, I think, in this podcast about what we believe in and what our theories are. I think if we want to go take it to the next level, then we've got to start to say, okay, all right, put your cards on the table here and say, well, what are these foods? What are these foods that are causing the inflammatory responses or causing this distress? And that's very difficult without knowing how balanced you are internally. And again, I can just sort of talk for what works for me and has worked for my athletes. And again, trying as much as possible to stay away from a concept. But we are having great successes with, and it's at varying levels, with removing what we call inflammatory foods, foods that cause intestinal stress.
And is that the foods that you just class them as inflammatory foods, or is that a case of that food is inflammatory for person A, exactly. This food is inflammatory for person B? So it's more specific to each person?
I think it goes to that 3-month concept there, of saying, right, okay, we have 3 months where we do sort of like quite a big detox, where we sort of open up and allow and take away as many of the things we know clinically researched can cause an inflammatory effect. And a little bit in your LR, your fast, where you just sort of, right, I'm going to give the whole system a shutdown. We're just not everyone who's...
Yeah, they're in the middle of the season, or sport, strong stuff,
or wants to do that. So there, I think we'll... And I think the classic example is people find out, just to go on a tangent totally, is people find out how little food they actually need. I think I eat nearly nothing in comparison to where I have it, but I'm never hungry. I never feel like I need food. I never feel like I'm... Always feel like I'm full of energy. And that whole thing where... Especially the sort of, I always have a go at the sort of CrossFit world. They're just for a bit of fun, really. And just say, you know, you guys walk past the box and you need to go for a steak. And it's sort of like, well, you know, I went in and did my stretching today, so that, then I'll go and have 3 steaks. And there is that sort of, I've done this, so I need to pound myself with food. And you actually end up finding out when everything's working, it's incredible how little you actually need to sustain yourself.
And it's the right types of food as well, isn't it? Because people just, like we talked about before, pile themselves with certain types of food, when actually that might not be what they need, or like you said, I don't need quite as much as that, or so it's the right types of things to eat as well.
Because ultimately, if that gut isn't working well, doesn't matter what you put through it, it's not absorbing it anywhere. So if it's not working and you need to, then the body's crying out for more food because it can't and absorb it. And that's definitely something I felt personally in my own health, is that when I look back at how much I used to eat versus how much I'm eating now, like I can sustain a day on a lot less food, and I've got a lot more energy than I used to have.
How should your body communicate with you? How is it your body can talk to you? Your body can't shout up and say, "Hey, JLC, that doesn't really suit me, mate. Can you please not feed me that again?" It can only communicate with you in certain ways. It can change or alter your appearance, of course, or it can alter your skin, it can alter your mood, but it can also say, in a shorter term, it can say, I'm hungry. But it's very, there's a lot of really good research at the moment that's sort of saying that the body can't necessarily tell the difference between thirst and hunger.
That's just the thing, isn't it? Your mum's always like, if you say you're hungry, they're always like, have a pint of water then.
Yeah, exactly. but there is that. And how is the body supposed to... All the body can communicate, really, is just say, give me something. It doesn't say, I'm lacking in vitamin B12 or I miss some D vitamin. It can't say that. All it can say is you just shout, you just get this feeling, I miss something.
It tells you in different ways that you don't understand. Like,
yes, you can't.
Bizarre symptoms that don't really, like you said, fatigue. I don't know, pins and needles. I think that's silly things that actually you can't interpret very well, so you just supply your body with something else.
Yes, yeah. You get that communication from the body, and it's like, okay, well, it misses something, let's just give it something. And the problem is you just never satisfy the body because you're not actually giving it what it needs. Whereas on the other way around, you get a healthy, happy, balanced body, and then you give it what it needs, Yeah, but then it stops shouting, I'm hungry, it stops shouting, give me more, it stops saying, I need all these things, and you don't end up having the same problems that you have now. And then the body fat drops. That's when you see the body fat dropping, because the body's then in harmony and it's easy. And the first thing the body will do always is a protection mechanism is to just to store body fat on us. It's our way of looking after ourselves. So the foods, I think the foods that we... There's sort of the heavy toxic foods, and of course it's the processed foods, and it's the obvious thing to start with to say, and caffeine and alcohol,
high sugars.
And
you just said caffeine, mate.
But I mean, caffeine is an incredible stress on the body, wonderful stress on the body to be recommended, but it is one of the in some people it's hugely inflammatory. So it's just, and what we tend to do is we tend to just say, like I say, take that sort of startup process where we just take everything that could be inflammatory out. And yes, people listening say, well, what are you eating then? Not a lot, to be honest. Mainly greens, green leafy vegetables, and that's about it to start with. And just gradually, as you say yourself, introducing food and see how you feel. And
so is this done, like you say, with your athletes, for example? Is this done outside of season then?
Yeah,
obviously.
Needs to
be. Yeah.
Yeah. What? But the, yeah.
Begins,
yes,
begins there.
Yes, I've got two or three starting here on the 1st of January who will race in May. So we've got a bit of time to get used to it. But they're going into a reasonably heavy training block when they start. But again, what do you want? Do you want to be an elite athlete? Do you want to be good, or do you want to be social? If you're a social person, just likes a bit of training, fine. This maybe isn't for you, but if you want to be an elite athlete, you need it's 14 days where it's torture and it's hell, but that's part of being a top athlete. Get on with it, you know, get it done, and drop the foods that are out. You still need to keep your training. Yes, you go through this huge dip where you feel tired and you have sort of a little bit of extra stress, but then you start to come back down the side and you start to feel good again, and you do feel great. You feel really good, so. So I mean, we're all the way out there where we're dropping any kind of grain, any kind of wheat-based, corn-based, rice-based. We just taking everything out. And not to say that any of those are bad in their individual entities, because I don't think they are. I think everybody should eat them and can eat them. But it's just a little bit of, we need to start somewhere.
Experiment.
Yeah, we need to clear the process. So literally just have enough food to sustain life at the start, and as neutral as, you know, tomatoes we wouldn't do, because tomatoes are fantastic, but tomatoes are acidic. You know, just taking everything that away, dairy products, and I'm not a sort of, everybody's lactose free, everybody should be gluten free. That's not, if you're hearing that, you're not listening.
Remove, add it in, see how you feel.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Give your stomach that rest. Give it just sort of 2 weeks of love and attention. Let it rest, and then start the process of building foods in and see how it goes. And then, as I say, that takes that 3 years before. The good thing is, I was saying now with myself, is that, yes, I might start to put on a couple of kilos, but I can just flick the switch because I know exactly what I should do and that's exactly how I should do it. I can flick the switch and bang, I can go back to the weight I want to be within a month and feel quite good again, which is a really nice place to be for the athletes, because then you could periodize that. You know, I'm racing in May, or I know I'm racing in June, or whatever it is, and you say, right, 3 months out, boom, we start on that. We know where we're going to be with the health. We're going to be down, we're going to be ready, and then off that, we're going to live a sort of more, I have like a DEFCON system. You know, DEFCON 1 means we're in race mode, we're going. DEFCON 2 is that with, for me, DEFCON, to be honest, I live like that most of the time. I just add caffeine because I love coffee. So DEFCON 2 for me is that with caffeine, and then actually completely the other way around to most people, I'll have like my DEFCON 3, which is I'm off and I eat whatever, and I'll probably do that over Christmas, you know, the last 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
For example, I've had a off and enjoyed that and that, but you can do that with a clear conscience.
Yeah,
good.
So there's our nutritional opinions.
Thoughts.
Coffee?
Nope.
Nope.
It's inflammatory for me, mate.
It's inflammatory for you. Okay. Red wine?
Also inflammatory.
Ah, okay. Good. I hope you enjoyed it, guys.